Welcome to another edition of Wrestling with Death. I am your ghost host with the most, the Reaper Matt Conard, and today on my podcast, I have arguably, or I'll just say one of the best managers in Pittsburgh, or Marcus will murder me.
Buddy, come on.
Hey, fucking, don't do that. I'm good at what I do. ladies and gentlemen, BC Steel.
Yes, hello, that is me.
BC.
I can confirm that it is me. How excited are you right now?
You can tell with my demeanor, I'm pumped.
I can tell.
My cat's excited too.
My cat's twerking. That means excitement.
You've been around the Pittsburgh area for a long time, right?
Yeah. My tenure could now, as of July 28th, my tenure would be able to drive. 16 years for people that...
Ooh.
Yeah.
One more year is legal consent.
That's true. 1 year ago, certain people would date it.
Certain people remain nameless.
That is true.
But are well aware who they are in this room. I don't like saying their name. You started at PWX, didn't you?
Yes. Well, sort of. I actually started with them and IWC at the same time.
How's that so?
Technically, I started, my first show was July 28, 2001, for a lady that was around for maybe a year. She had a lot of money.
Mm.
She was giving out a lot of money. She was paying a lot of money. See a pattern there. That's why she didn't last.
Yeah.
Potter and I were friends with her, and she was running a show. She needed a referee. Back then, the idea was that if you weren't trained to do something, you just shouldn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was going through training school, but I was training to wrestle. Imagine how that would have turned out. Oh, no. she goes, I need a referee. And I said, I appreciate it, but I don't feel comfortable doing that. I don't think I'd be any good. I said, Potter is really good. He's not 18. I went, how about this guy? He's not available. How about this guy? He's not available. Damn. Okay. I said, I'll do it. So I watched tapes for like a week, got a crash course, started there. Somebody goes, hey, you know, you're not the worst I've seen. You should contact PWX. So I contacted them. And Norm Connors for IWC, who's been, like, back in 98 when I was 15, he used to drive me to shows. I would pick his brain, annoyingly so. I would not shut up, go figure. And he was kind of the guy, too, that was running his IWC in Monroeville. So I think within a show or a week, I worked for him because no referees showed up. He booked three, none of them showed, and I happened to have my gear. And I think the following week, I started in McKeesville. So, yeah, I kind of got like five bookings, steady bookings, my first month, I would say, in the wrestling business. Because I'm that good.
So, was your original intention was to be a worker?
Yeah. My original
How quickly intention. Did you realize that's not going to happen?
I was actually really good at putting... I was actually good. I can put together spots and matches. If you tell me to fall left, I'd fall right.
Mm.
If you push me over, I'm going to somehow fall on my face. There's no athletic ability.
Mm.
Like, there's very little. So, but I was like, okay, I've seen guys that have no athletic ability, but they're entertaining. I can do that. I can just be an entertaining wrestler. And then my first managing in 02, I was told that somebody wanted to use me as a manager. I needed to get go outside Pittsburgh and work as much as I could. And I was up on the guy's shoulders, and he went to give me the FU, and normally, you know, you push the guy up, and I went to push off. Well, I slipped off his shoulders, his shoulder dropped, and I just, right on my head.
Oh, shit.
It was actually for Jim Hawkins, their Mason-Dixon in Anvil, I want to say, outdoor thing.
Right.
And bounced on my head, went numb, couldn't feel anything for a bit. I say it was like 30 seconds, it was probably five. Let's be honest. It was probably 5 seconds, but it was scary as hell.
Yeah.
And I couldn't move. And the thing down there was Battle Royal at the end of the show. Everybody has to be in it.
Mm.
Yay. I can't move, but I'm going to be in it. So guys found out I was young, so they're taking liberties. They're beating the crap out of me. Actually, Doc Gallows, his very second show was that day. Before the show, tells Potter and I and a couple other guys, he goes, I love wrestling, but, you know, I got to wear a mask because I play football and I don't want to get caught. And we're all like... I can swear.
Yeah.
Okay, I kind of figured. I've heard your stuff before.
Mm-hmm.
We're like, fuck you. Like, that's the dumbest story we've ever heard. Fuck off. You're horrible. You're the shits. So little did we find out, one, is it true? And well, he got the last laugh.
A little bit.
I love him now, but when I think back then, I'm like, you stiff mother effer. So match goes on. Guys are beating the crap out of me. I finally get dumped. I'm laying there. I'm like, I really can't move that well. So he picks me up, and the West Virginia veteran, Lance Malinowski, goes, don't move, kid. I'm like, oh, okay, they're going to kick and punch me. No, he chops me, and he chops me, and he chops me. Turns me around. I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to get big chops. This kid doesn't know what he's doing. I'll be fine. He punches me in the chest. Like, punches. Not like a work punch, but like, I guess this is what I do repeatedly. On the 3-hour drive home, I realized I'm not going to want to wrestle anymore. Like, my desire to wrestle was completely gone.
You had it in your mind that's all it was going to be all the time?
Not that I thought it was going to be that all the time, but I'm like, I am really fucked up, and this is probably not good. So from that point, I thought, I'll just take really big, stupid bumps, and that'll make up for not wrestling. So then I did that for a while, and then I was like, not good. All those concussions later, probably not good.
So between reffing and managing, what steered you one way over the other?
I liked refereeing, but I said on my podcast, cheap plug, that wrestling changed my life. I was, if you can believe it, I was a nerd. I had very few friends. I had no self-confidence. I couldn't speak in public. I couldn't speak in private. Uh-huh. I heard my own voice and I cried. I was like, oh, God, what the hell? But so as I started kind of getting more of a personality and I would see and notice certain things, just down at training one day, somebody goes, it wasn't Marcus. Hey, buddy, come on, go ahead. No, somebody goes, hey, just try and manage. Like, what do you think you would do? And it was bad. I called a guy who was my age now, old, which he appreciated. I swept the ref's leg every single time, which is not good.
No.
And really had no semblance of it, but I at least wanted to learn. And I thought, I can referee. I'd be really good because there's not a lot of good referees. There's more now than there were then. But I thought managing is something that there's not a lot of in Pittsburgh that I looked at and went, that's good. That's something I want to see. I like that. There weren't that many. And to be honest, there was a guy, Damien Stockholm, but he was kind of in and out. He was fading in and out, and he wasn't really doing it on a regular basis. So I thought, okay, there's a spot for me here. And then kind of like reffing, I sat with people. I'd pick brains, and I just watched every tape I could think of. Cornette, Heyman, Albano, J.J. Dillon, run the gambit of guys that I could learn from or flat out steal from or completely steal from. But if you steal from one person, it's plagiarism. I stole from a bunch of people, so it's research and crafting a character. That's how it works.
Yeah.
Pretty smart guy.
Who'd you learn the most from? Like, not saying the Cornette stuff, but locally, like when you start, who do you cite as being your biggest, like, influence
from managing standpoint,
just from the business in general?
There's a few from the kind of the, not the stuff in front of the curtain. It would be one of two people. Either Norm Connors, who I pal around with and picked his brain all the time, or Quinn Magnum, because he was a guy that would, he's actually the guy that started me managing. So one of those two guys probably, at least teaching me the behind the stuff, and in front of the curtain too, because Norm was a manager for years. As far as the managing, Damien Stockholm or Drew Lazario. And not that I actually would sat down. English is hard. I should be a promoter. Not that I would actually sit down and like go word for word, like, hey, what is this? What is this? What is this? But I would watch them and just focused on them the entire time. What are they doing? What are they not doing? Okay, well, he's yelling here, but he's not here. Why? He's doing this here, but not here. Why? How does he sell? How does he differ from the guy he's managing? What does he say? Just all that stuff. And I would try and watch and learn that. And in between watching like Heyman and all that stuff. But any manager you meet that isn't watching those guys probably doesn't know what they're doing.
When you're going through the, not going through the motions, when you're at PWX, what do you really think was your first opportunity to really show, I guess, what you'd call your entertaining side, your personality as a manager?
Probably the first time I was given an angle to kind of have to control. Spanish, the lady that I mentioned earlier, the lady that got my start that was spending all the money, resurfaced and started spending more money. So people were coming in at the time. The Spanish announce team, guys like Xavier, who was big in Ring of Honor at the time, Frankie Kazarian, Elix Skipper, Glacier, like actually Glacier. There was a trainee years ago, they called him Glacier. I don't know why. I think it's because he moved slow. The only thing I know about him was he was moved slow in the ring and he pooped himself. That's all I know. So if he's out there listening, I still remember you, buddy. So we're looking at the card and somebody goes, ha, it's going to be Glacier. That's funny. Yeah, Glacier's going to come in. Blood runs cold right around the corner. Hi, guys. I'm Ray. And we're like, it's fucking Glacier. What the? This was 04, so WCW wasn't that far gone. But, I was put into an angle with the Spanish announce team where I was trying to find guys to come and take them out. And the basic instruction was they're not going to be here all the time. And when they are, you have to carry the promos. I'm like, oh, great. So I would sit down with them and they were actually really cool. Like, what do you want to do? And I'm like, okay, then I have no ideas. So, so I would kind of like, I couldn't say I've got nothing. Because if I say I have nothing, it's going to go off the rails. So I had to have something. So I would always think of, okay, what can I do? Like, what should my emotion be in this moment? Should I be serious? Okay, yeah, here I should be serious because they just one-upped me, so I'm angry. I just got the best of them here, so I should be happy. And then it culminated in managing Psicosis and Juventud Guerrera against the SATs, which actually lasted a minute. I cut a promo and they beat the crap out of me. But still, I got that little bit of... But I had to direct the promo, and I don't know if people know this, but Juventud Guerrera speaks English, but it's not fluent like you and I are speaking. Although I proved earlier I can't speak fluent English. So
I get that.
Psicosis didn't say much. SATs did. But randomly, who was the guy in three count in WCW? Not Shane Helms, not Shannon Moore, the other. Evan Courageous. He was managing the SATs. So he was the guy that I was bouncing stuff off most. And he's like, yeah, you know, you could do this, you could do that, you could do that. And then the SAT's like, nah, you don't want to do any of that. So then I said to him, I'm like, what do we do? You go, you do what you want. I'm like, so I just got three different directives. I'm just going to go out and hope for the best. I had like 102 degree fever. Screw it. This is wrestling. I had 106 degree fever. My T cell count was like 3.
Jesus.
I was ready to die. It was horrible. I really was sick. And I'm like, okay, this is going to be not left up to me, but that crowd was very different. Like flips and high spots and stuff. They're like, okay, yeah, yeah. But that wasn't what they were there for. So, I had to take guys that my two guys were over. They knew who they were from WCW. These other guys, you know, were trying to do this angle. So that entire thing was probably the best figuring out not only how to be entertaining, but when to be the funny guy, when to be the serious guy, and when to show my ass, literally and figuratively.
When did you, I've seen some of your, correct me if I'm wrong, it was Golden Rain?
Yes.
I've seen some of your stuff with Potter.
The questionable
segments that were actually really funny. I'm giving all the credit to Potter.
Absolutely, of course.
How did you and Potter get hooked up? You guys have been friends for a long time, right?
Yeah. I met him September of 2000. We have a friendiversary.
Okay.
As Marcus Mann and Pollock do, so it's a totally normal thing, of course. But I met him in 2000 at a local show and found out that he was setting up rings in 98 up until that point. I was setting up rings in 98 for two different places. We never crossed paths. Started to become friends, started talking. I'm like, we share the same goals, the same ideas, the same everything. So he was reffing, I was reffing. He was reffing, I was managing. When he came over to wrestling, he was doing the Mantis thing, and again, Quinn goes, you guys are great friends. This just makes all the sense in the world to put you together. It's like, cool, awesome. Stuff happened. We were gone for a short time, then we got back together with the Golden Rain thing. Potter completely changed his gimmick. Mantis and Robert Parker Williams are vastly different. And the idea we had at the time was to have a bunch of young guys. Like guys like Travis Fame were there at the time. Tanner Reynolds was there at the time. Ryan Rain was there at the time. Rain actually went to my high school, graduated several years after me. But that's the guy we looked at like, okay, here's guys that we're pointing out to go, I want him, let's do this whole thing. Let's actually make it like a group of young guys, but you also have the guys that have been around a while that can kind of lead the charge, so to speak. Because at the time, crowds weren't drawing that great, so we had a lot of freedom to kind of do what we wanted and take chances and stuff that we wouldn't do in front of a larger crowd. So it was kind of experimental in some ways, but it just made sense to have Potter and I together. and have, you know, try and help these other guys along too. And as we were doing that, we're like, nobody's filming anything to upload. Like, nobody's filming anything. So I said, what are our restrictions? Nothing, as long as it's funny and entertaining. Okay, so we're going to do this. So we had one where Potter is working out, getting ready for the Sean Evans Memorial Tournament. And I've got him running upstairs. I've got him three stairs. He's benching cats, because they had cats at the time. So he's benching cats. So he's eating old cake that I found in the fridge, which I called protein cake. all kind of just ridiculous stuff.
Yeah.
We did a promo under the covers. We did a promo where it was the night before Christmas, but it was the night before something, and down on the mat, not a creature was stirring, not even a rat, which is probably the best line I've ever written. there's another reason that's funny at that time, but we'll go into that at a later date. I would say what I'm doing now is probably the best stuff I've ever done in terms of the mark aspect of, oh, you're going to do all this cool stuff. That part of it, my performance, everything, the guys I'm working with, everything across the gambit, except when I worked with you. That was definitely the best, but no, close second.
That was the worst time of my career.
7 times per show, Matt Conard, ladies and gentlemen. The man of 1,000 run-ins. Even in matches and shows he's not a part of, he just comes right out.
All that work, nothing to show for it.
But you kind of do, when you were in, when you debuted in IWC, LaRusso says to me, he goes, yeah, you're going to be working with Conard. I go, again? He goes, yeah. What? What do you say again for? I go, no, I don't mean it like that. I go, he can't leave me. I feel bad. Like, he literally can't. He goes, yeah, we're the match with Bulk, and it might be the main event too. And I go, he really can't leave me now. I get him main events even when I'm not with him. So,
well, a lot of good that did me.
Well, yeah, touche.
Yeah. If you guys have a chance to look up those Golden Rain things, by the way, do it, because they're legitimately funny.
That's one.
Yeah. That's one. Once that runs its course,
yeah,
where do you really go from there? Do you go down a more serious tone? Because this is one thing that, to their detriment, in my opinion, PWX is focused on, is way too many factions all the time. Do you just get thrown from faction to faction? Like, is that your fate there?
A little bit, because when I got good at what I was doing, it was, how do we get this guy over? Like, a guy would get a chance to go out on his own. Not saying you or anybody else, just saying a guy would get to go out on his own, usually as a babyface.
Mm-hmm.
If that didn't work, we're flipping him heel, putting him with Ben. Or, if there's a veteran who, how do we spice this guy up? Put him with Ben.
Mm-hmm.
When, from the Golden Rain thing, I went to Crusher, who at that point won the NWA national title,
right,
which was really cool, not because I know the NWA hasn't meant a big deal since like mid-80s,
right,
but to say that I managed a guy that held a title that has like Tully Blanchard and Dusty and all that, it's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Of course, there's a large gap in between that, but the big thing for me at that point was actually staying by myself, like staying, not having 50 million guys. Let me focus on like one thing. And the thing I liked with that was the Golden Rain thing ran its course. I was with Crusher and his quote-unquote brother, Tony Hansen.
Mm-hmm.
Again, trying to help a young guy as much as I could, but I also had the veteran. And then it was kind of neat at that point, because when Crusher was the champ, they were just bringing random guys in. Like, they brought in, he won it from Pepper Parks, who is on Impact, as the name escapes me.
I don't watch.
But he's on Impact now. They brought in Phil Shatter, who was Gunner.
Okay.
Phil Shatter, Phil Atlas. There's two of those.
It's Phil Shatter.
Okay, I thought so. They brought in Axel Rotten. They brought in Tracy Smothers. I loved work, because it was always a different, every show you're going to be with a different guy. And Tracy Smothers was probably my favorite of that time, not only because he put me over huge, which, of course, I always appreciate, but he was a guy that, when he put the match together, he gave advice after, stuff that I'd never heard before. Like, the one thing he said to me was, he goes, hey, do you want to do this? And I said, I have no problem doing that. I said, I'm not comfortable. Can I do this instead? He goes, I actually like that better. He goes, way less heat, way less for you to have to sell. And I went, okay. He said, if you're never uncomfortable with something, don't do it. Hope that you work with people creative enough to come up with something else that you're comfortable with. Mm-hmm. I was like, never heard that before.
Right.
And then Axel Rotten said that he loved me as a manager, but hated me as a ring announcer. Because I was a heel ring announcer, which he's right.
Yeah.
But it was another, that was another case where, who are we going to get to ring announce? Nobody has that voice that projects. That wasn't really a good example of that. I just basically stole Chuck Roberts ring announcing so style. But yeah, so that was that at that time, and that was kind of cool. And then after going that, I went the other route again of being the leader of a stable, in which guys would kind of come in and out, yourself included, come in and out, interchange, intersperse. Mm-hmm. I think I've managed, I figured it out the other day, I think if I went through the number of people I've managed, it's in the hundreds of wrestlers. Mm-hmm. Some of them, actually, I manage them well. Very few.
Well,
pretty much Chris, LaRusso, Bulk Nasty, that's it. Everybody else I was horrible and hot garbage.
Well, I really don't attach that to you as much as...
Well, I did manage you, so you're kind of burying yourself there, kid.
Yeah, well...
Although, hey, I have... I don't think I have it now, but I did have a text of you saying very nice things about me.
I did?
Yeah. And I was like, he's prob... I know he doesn't drink or do drugs, but maybe somebody was painting outside and he got a whiff of it. You also said you saw elephants, so I kind of figured there was something.
I think it, maybe it was more so, it was like, well, there goes my only direction.
Well, yeah, because I don't know if you want to go that route, but I abruptly left PWX.
That's where I was headed next. Yeah. Yeah, you just kind of...
It was literally... just so I had a disagreement about where the company was going. I thought the focus should be on this. Mm-hmm. Other people said the focus... One person said the focus should be on that. Mm-hmm. I don't think he understood that I was having a serious conversation. Like, I'm serious. I want to help this place. This is where I've been for 12, 13 years. I want this place to grow. Here's what I think we should do. We're not doing that. It went back and forth, and it was the, well, you don't understand. You know, you got to look at it from this point of view. I said, no, I've been around long enough. I understand. I know where you're coming from. I respect that. And at the end of the day, it is your money. That's why I'll never complain to a great deal. Or I'll complain, but I won't bitch and moan about somebody telling me to do something because it's not my money on the line. Mm-hmm. You're paying me. So as long as I'm not, you know, getting naked or throwing myself through glass or something, I'm fine.
Yeah.
And getting naked is negotiable, ladies.
I've seen video. I know.
Yeah, unfortunately. that's when I wasn't. I'm still not in great shape, but that's when I was the cake in the balloon. Or a potato salad in a pillowcase. Yeah, think about that. We'll try to sleep tonight. But so I left, and it was that day I said I left on the private discussion that we were having. Mm-hmm. I texted the group text that it was you and Pollock and System Elite, Marcus, Peyton. I said, guys, I just wanted you guys to be the first to know. I'm gone. Quinn was super cool with it. He thanked me for everything I did and said, you know, hopefully this isn't the end of you as a character. I said, it's definitely the end for me here. He said, cool. You know, he definitely understood. Most of the guys understood. I felt bad because there were some things that I wanted to close out. I wanted to close out with you and Gory. Wanted to close out with Kato because I think that there was going to be something really neat coming from that. Didn't end up happening. From there, obviously, Potter was another one of the first ones I told. And Potter said to me, you should come talk to Plummer. And I went, no, thank you. I said, I want to leave wrestling. I don't... This last little bit dragged me so frustrating. Not saying I know everything, mm-hmm. but I know marketing. I know brand creation and management. I know how that works. So that is what I know. And I'm being told, no, you don't. Like, I don't want to deal with that. I don't want to get that invested into something, even though it's not my money, but get that invested emotionally into something and have just like punching in the face, like repeatedly, metaphorically speaking, not literally. But he had me do it. And Jake Clemens, who was there at the time, bro, just come on down. I got to do Vince Russo because that's the thing. Bro, if you come down to IWC, the ratings will go to an 8.0, even though they weren't on TV. So he said it. And Dombrowski said to me, you know, maybe there's a spot for you doing commentary on road shows. I went, I love doing commentary with Dombrowski. Dombrowski could carry a mute to commentary and make him look good. So he can obviously carry me. I know words. So I got to thinking about it. I'm like, okay, I'll do it. And then I said to Jesse, he was the first one. I said, what do you think if I come to IWC? Do you think I'd be a good fit? He goes, a lot of people have kind of brought that up. And I went, really? Mm. Like, I was kind of shocked that I figured manager, that's what he's looked at. If people don't know me, how would they know what value I have? They probably think, he's stupid. Internet says I need giant fake tits, which they're right. Me and Marcus, man, both need giant fake
Internet's
tits.
Internet's not wrong, never.
That's what the wrestling business needs. Mm. So just had to, I had to find a way to throw that out there. But so I went there and I talked to Plummer, and I didn't even get one word out before he said, "What do you think about you and LaRusso?" And I went, "Huh?" And he kind of gave me a funny look. I said, "Well, I'm killing this interview. Great." Because my thinking was, hey, here's what I can do in commentary. If you ever need help from a booking standpoint, if you ever need help, if you want somebody to give you advice and tell you if your stuff is bad, that. And then he hit me with that. And I said, well, I kind of stumbled over my words. The great wordsmith that I am, I had nothing to say. And I said, after I thought about it, and Chris and I talked about it too, because we'd done it before. It's like, we've done it before. You know, it's not new, but new faces, new people, new characters, new opponents, stuff like that. So it made it a lot more interesting and challenging. And along with that, I figured I'd get to do commentary with Dombrowski, so it was a win-win. Mm-hmm. And when I was there that first night just talking to Plummer, I wasn't on the show. I had guys that I hadn't seen in a while come up to me like, are you coming over? Well, I don't know. Like, I'm here to talk to him, but to be honest, I really don't want to. No, you should. We need somebody like you. And I'm like, okay, this is a rib. Okay, they're screwing with me. Somebody's going to come out. Ah, get out, and they're going to toss me out on my ass. Mm-hmm. But it felt good, and it also made me realize, this is going to sound so egotistical, but I don't care because I'm amazing. It made me remember how really good I am at this wrestling thing and how much knowledge I have. Mm-hmm. And I tell people, even if you don't respect me, I don't care. Mm-hmm. As long as the people I work with do, the promoters, that's all I care about. But even if you think I'm a complete putz and just think I'm recycling information from smarter people, take that information that I'm giving you from them. Mm-hmm. It's still got some kind of value there. And flowing through that, it just kind of... I'm probably having the most fun I've ever had in wrestling. It's close. There's a few other moments working with Potter, doing the stuff with Marcus, doing the stuff when I was with the SATs, and I got to introduce a bunch of guys that were, you know, big. I was big fans of. That was kind of cool. But This is probably the most mainstream stuff I've done, the most eyes on it. Mm. And on top of that, definitely the most challenging, because I'm always trying to think of different ways to change up this or make this better. And I will credit Marcus as well, and I told him I would do this. In 2011, when I was actually ready to leave wrestling the first time, Marcus is the guy that came along and went, he didn't actually say this, but he goes, okay, now it's on. Mm-hmm. Because here's a manager that can cut promos, that's good around the ring, that's creative. I call him Scorsese, which if I ever unleash the podcast that I did with him, mm-hmm. it'll happen like in 2019.
Yeah.
And stuff won't be topical, but we'll probably discuss it.
Yeah.
So I call him the Scorsese because his ideas are so in-depth and intricate. The thing that we disagree on sometimes is, sometimes in wrestling, you can't have intricate. Because when you go to a wrestling show, you're not watching Gone with the Wind. You're not watching Titanic or Shawshank Redemption or a long, drawn-out story. You're watching a one-act play, mm-hmm. followed by another one-act play, followed by another one-act play. Like, to keep that in that vein, sometimes it can be too much. That's why sometimes stipulations can be confusing or long, drawn-out sequences of tournaments and this and that and the other. But yeah, he was the guy that revitalized it and then kind of went down a little bit. And when I came back, guys like Chris and Bulk and Potter and all the guys that put me over, I am indebted to because I'm having the most fun and probably the most eyes on me that I've ever had. Mm-hmm. So,
well, I'm going to stop you for a second so I can actually put a break in here.
We're going to take a break and we'll be right back with BC Steel. ProWrestlingTees.com/Matt Connard. Head over there right now to pick up the new Spook Show t-shirt along with a variety of other creepy, kooky delights in shirt form. ProWrestlingTees.com/Matt Connard. Go now.
And we're back with BC Steel. Before the break, and a long-winded answer, we covered you coming over to IWC. When you actually came in, what was your first show there? Like, was it a vast difference from BWX? Like, did you feel out of place? What was first show like?
My first show, I felt really out of place. Mm-hmm. I did the manager thing. Manager comes out, he's taking notes. I was kind of, I hemmed and hawed about it because that's traditional. Every manager comes out and takes notes. But I was new, so I wasn't going to be like, here's what I think we should do, sir. And it's not my money. So I was willing to do whatever he wanted to do within reason. So I thought, okay, well, the guys in the ring, Dylan Bostic, Andrew Pallas. I worked with Bostic, only worked with Pallas maybe once. So I thought, they'll at least acknowledge me when I'm out there, so that'll give some credence. I'm thinking, nobody's going to know who I am. They're not going to care. Joe's on commentary, so he'll make me sound like $1 million. Right. So I went out there, And as I'm walking through in my head, I'm like, this isn't going to go good. This isn't going to go good. Because, you know, I'm positive. And I go out there and people start chanting BC sucks. And I'm like, okay, some people know me. It wasn't a large crowd. It was a smattering of people. Mm. And then Bostic kind of looked over and Palace looked over. And I thought, okay, then I saw other people look over. I'm like, that's all I needed. I'm good. And then I went to the back. Like 30 seconds, but then I went to the back. Mm-hmm. When Chris debuted, aside from me going right before I went out, because I did cut a promo and everything, and I go, hey, wouldn't it be funny if nobody cares who you are? Okay, buddy, see ya. He was a tad nervous and hyped up, right. As he gets.
Yeah.
And he goes, what? And I go, okay, see you later. So I'm going out there giggling to myself because I'm like, oh, God, what if it actually happens?
Yeah.
This is going to suck. Then they pop for him, and I cut the promo with us. I'm like, okay, now I feel good. I feel familiar. And as we got Bulk, because Chris and I both said when we were there, Bulk is a natural heel. He's a natural asshole. Mm-hmm. We need him. Like, that's the one thing I said I wanted. I said, I want Bulk Nasty. The first show was there, and I told Chris, and Chris goes, we'll have to see if we can make that happen. I said, we need to give the office or pull the office or whatever the term is. I said, that's the guy we need. And now it feels like I've managed Bulk for years. And I've obviously managed Chris for years. So hopefully I can be the best thing to Bulk's career, just like I was to Chris's and Crusher and Potter and yours, of course. Oh,
done wonders for me.
Well, Bulk's first show, one of the shows, he was out there like three times. He goes, I don't remember the last time I was out here three times. I go, we call that the Matt Connard theory. And he kind of looked at me funny. And then like a few months later, you guys ended up working. I'm like, I wonder if he gets it now.
I was only out once that show.
No. Twice.
Wait, I was?
Yeah.
I forgot.
Would have been third if you ran out.
Well, you can... I don't want to put it on the promoter, but it was it was the promoter's fault.
The greatest audible in the world. Throw Bulk out. You're out of here. And I go, he didn't even do anything. And Potter goes, he cheated that one time. And I go, okay, that's fair. Bulk, you got to go.
Plummer asked me one question. At the right time, by the time I look around, it already happened.
That showed you.
Yeah. That's what I get for listening to the promoter. Fuck off, Plummer. I'm looking for my spot. By the way, thank you for having me.
Hey, thanks for having me. Now fuck off. I have shit to do. I'm making you money.
Bring me back when the Hardys are in town.
Well, I made the joke. I said when you're there, I said, wow, you're main event in the first show. Why don't you just, have a title shot or work a main event?
Yeah.
And sure enough,
sure.
I am the Nostradamus of your career. My powers are very, very limited. Very limited.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? You're going to wrestle in West Virginia soon. Bet it happens.
Yeah, but it does happen.
Bam.
As soon as Saturday, maybe.
Holy
cow.
When will this be released? Or escape? My episode won't be released. It'll escape. It's not going to go platinum.
Oh, it's gone.
Oh, no. It's going to go plywood on the verge of becoming cardboard.
It'll be like next Wednesday. It's Thursday.
Okay, that works.
Yeah.
I'm going to triple post this all. I'm going to make it the most listened, even if I have to create different IP addresses and just keep watching it over and over.
Or
listening, considering this is audio.
You just can run to different computers and just listen exactly. To it. See, we're so far off. I got to get back on track. So when it gets to LaRusso winning the Super Indie title, how does that affect you? Because obviously it would affect LaRusso differently.
Yeah.
But the Super Indie title in this area, or in indie wrestling in general, holds some sort of prestige.
I would agree.
Would you say?
Yeah, I would agree.
You being associated with somebody who holding the Super Indie title, does that you've been associated with people that have held titles before? Does this feel different to you at all, considering it's a title that has a history to it, and more than just that little isolated company?
Absolutely. I said before the national title was cool because way back when Tully Blanchard, Dusty Rhodes, the Super Indie title, I ref the first Super Indie show. Hentai defeated, I want to say, Christopher Daniels in the finals. So that was 2002. Fast forward, would have been 13 years later, Chris wins it. So it's kind of cool, like full circle. I have a theory that everything in wrestling comes full circle. Mm-hmm. But for this case, it was kind of cool because he even said in a promo, or I said it, the guys that have held it or gone for it, AJ Styles, Loki, CM Punk possibly, I can't remember.
Yeah.
But guys that are today or the last like 5-10 years of the biggest names in wrestling have held that championship.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's also really cool because Chris is obviously a friend. He's all of our friend. I don't know what impression that was, but so it was cool for him to hold it because I think for him that was vindication of, yeah, he's good. Because I think one of the knocks on Chris sometimes is people see him as the guy in 2006 or 7 where he's wearing like Sub-Zero gear or he's wearing black pants.
Here's the thing that really irks me about the shit people give Chris. People give Chris so much shit because they assume he, with all of the Ring of Honor camps he's went to, that he's just buying his way in or he's just wasting his money and he hasn't earned it. Chris has fucking earned it.
Yeah, they have enough guys to get money from them and go, yeah, we're not using him.
No.
Not money.
So, Chris has worked hard and he continues to work hard.
He's always different. I put Chris over for... If you ever doubted how, and I said this either in a promo or typed it up because I was probably salty and had to get out my anger. If you look at matches he's had in IWC against big guys, against littler guys, against Jonathan Gresham, super indie. Jonathan Gresham is vastly different than Mike Orlando. Two really good matches, really good matches. You see him wrestling Andrew Palace in a cage, way different than when he wrestled Gory up in that town that I got banned from. Or suspended, if you will.
Yeah.
Clearfield, there we go.
Yes, Clearfield.
That's how I remember stuff. I describe it, and then in my head it goes, Bennett means this. I'm like, ah, yes. So that was the different style matches. Yeah. And when he works with Bulk, it's different than when he works with me. He is well-rounded in his ability. And Tommy Dreamer said at House of Hardcore, they were going over the match, and he said just on his work, and Jericho said the same thing. Watch your feet, by the way. I'm name-dropping like a mofo. Said to him, your work is good. I can't critique the work. I can nitpick it, but I can't critique the work. Mm-hmm. It's good. There's not a ton of stuff that I could say you should do this differently. And to get it from two guys that, one, have been there to WWE, the biggest company in the world, and two, that have been around so long, think of all the guys they've seen. That is the highest praise. That's way different than us sitting here and going, hey, guys, Chris LaRusso is really good. It's like, oh, man, really? Or Jericho and them saying, hey, Chris LaRusso is really good. That holds a little bit more weight than us, just a little bit.
Right.
So I think that was more of a vindication for him. It's really cool to see my friend do that. Yeah, it's awesome to say, hey, I got to sit in on that, and I got to watch him wrestle Sam Adonis, who's the biggest star, biggest heel in Mexico right now, who was in the ring with Chris Jericho, which is the best rib ever because Chris had no idea that was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And when he goes, special guest ring announcer, Chris goes, what? I go, oh, he's fucking pissed at you. He goes, what? And I go, he's going to fuck you up. And he goes, what? So we go to the back. I go, did you really think I meant that? He goes, no, I didn't hear what you said. I'm like, damn it. But, and even more so, the culmination of Fabulous, John McChesney, seeing that match up in Meadville, you know, where you took on the Hardys. I don't know if people knew that.
Well, it's not about me.
We could make it about. Man, see, that's why I do my podcast wrong. It's all about me. I don't care who I interview. But just to see the culmination of that with Steamboat and the story they told and everything in between, which I don't know if Chris LaRusso told this. The story was the chop. Fabulous has amazing chops.
Mm-hmm.
McChesney, I don't know if people will really refer to him as just Fabulous anymore, but McChesney has amazing chops with the right hand.
Mm-hmm.
Chris is working on the right hand. So Steamboat looks down at him and goes, are you left-handed? No. Okay. Chris goes, that's the story. So basically, Steamboat thought they both didn't know what side to work. And I look at Bulk, I go, do you believe he's fucking backyarders? And Bulk goes, what? He's fucking yarders. They're no fucking good. And Steamboat knows it now. And he goes, I forget my spot. I go, or something about a spot. I go, when Hooven attacks me, kill him. He goes, okay. So we're good. But to see all the stuff he's done in IWC, if you watch Chris LaRusso, and I say this about other guys, if you watch certain guys and you don't see how good they are, that either tells me you don't want to or you don't know what you're looking at. Because certain guys, you can just get it. And I'll put two people over, one because he's sitting across from us. When people knock Marcus Knight, not the fake tits thing that I mentioned earlier, because that needs to happen.
Yeah.
That's the only thing we're missing. We get signed tomorrow to somebody. Probably not somebody we wanted to, but we get signed. But when people say, they're no good. It's like, okay, well, the guys we work with say we're really good. The guys we work with, there have been people that have requested us.
Mm-hmm.
There's promoters that like us. Promoters that give us tons of responsibility. So who's to say we're not good? It's either guys that don't know, don't want us to be good, don't care, or just don't know what the fuck they're talking about. So, F you people. I don't think they're listening to this podcast.
No one is.
This really is just for you.
It is.
Really.
Colic wasn't wrong. This is just for me.
Damn.
Have you seen a lot of improvement in Bulk since you started working with him?
Because Bulk, as a heel, yeah,
still relatively new.
About a year?
About maybe a year. But what improvements have you seen in him in that year?
He seems more comfortable taking direction. Mm. Taking control, rather, and directing the story. When we started, it was really cool because he said, if you have any ideas, please let me know. Please tell me. And one of the funny things when we started was, I knew his spots within the first couple matches. So in the match with you, actually, I said, Vader bomb. He goes, yeah, good idea. I'm like, yeah, we're doing stuff. So he's more comfortable not only putting a match together, but putting stuff in certain places. Because for a guy his size, he doesn't have to do a lot.
No.
He really doesn't.
No.
And he's also getting better at pulling back a little bit, not threatening to kill the entire crowd. Because I don't know if people understand, if he could and somebody stepped to him, he would knock them out. There is no messing with Bulk Nasty. I feel so safe. And I said in a promo, why do I say and do the things I do? It's because I have him. That's a shoot. If you have Bulk Nasty beside you, same with Shane Taylor. Mm-hmm. You want to hit me? Okay, go through Shane. I want to see a drunk person or even a sober person try and get through one of them. Go right ahead. Then if you get through them, well, you wouldn't get to me because I'd run away. But yeah, the improvement, not only with that too, he's more confident speaking. Because the thing I told him when we started, I said, you don't have to speak. I said, you can be the silent giant, the guy that kills everybody. But I said, if you have something, throw it in. Like, threaten somebody. Mm-hmm. Flex. I said, all you have to do is flex, because his arms are huge, and be mean, and be brutal, and beat the holy fuck out of people. That's what you do as a big guy. And I think he's definitely a better heel than babyface. Yeah. Two matches, I mean, by far.
Yeah.
Because a babyface, it's like, not comparing him to them, but could Hitler ever be a babyface? Probably not. Not saying Bulk is Hitler, but Bulk is legitimately not liked by people. I don't know why. I love him. But fan-wise, there are people who are like, screw him. I don't like him.
I like Bulk.
I like him.
I like him.
It's not that, like, turn the channel, F him, I don't want to be here.
Either. No. So. No. I like Bulk a fair amount. I think it would surprise people if they knew Bulk personally just how little fucks he actually gives.
Yeah.
If he could find a way, a family-friendly way, to channel that into him talking, I think he'd be one of the most believable heels in the area.
It would be amazing. Somebody asked the him and Hooven thing. Somebody goes, hey, you know, you can push the envelope a little bit. And it was weird the way they asked it, but they meant, can you push the envelope, you know, over the top and be racist? And I went, my initial response was, huh, can I? But then I went, no, seriously, I'm not coming to the show in a white hood. That's not, I said, but really? And Bulk goes, we can push the envelope. Like, we can really push. I go, no. I said, that was the one thing I had to cut myself. Like, I couldn't make outrageous comments.
Yeah.
I couldn't bring up things that I used to bring up. I couldn't say that stuff. So I've had to dial that back a little bit. But yeah, Bulk was like, yeah, we can. I'm like, no, we cannot. I said, Twitter, we can.
Yeah.
The internet, when we film a promo for the internet, sure. But let's not create a race war or a riot on the show. Well, a riot, good, but not for that reason. Because there's the line of, yeah, I want to see him get beat up to, I don't feel comfortable being around this. Mm-hmm. And that's the line I don't want to cross. We haven't yet. There's still time.
Yeah.
We still have time.
I mean, you guys are bringing John Gisham around a lot more now.
Well,
so
that's true. Greatest thing I've ever seen at Super Indy, he spits on the ground. Or LaRusso spit on the ground. One of them spit on the ground. Gresham runs off. Chris LaRusso drops down into the spit. Greatest spot I have ever seen in my life. Didn't know it was coming, and I legitimately was laughing on the outside. Well, I was covering my face trying to look mad with, you know, a happy look on my face. Right. But greatest spot ever. Just had to throw that in there. I really do get off the topic.
Yeah. It's really, really, really topical story where we are at. Thank you, Ben.
Hey, did you see Titanic? Speaking of topical references.
Fuck's sake. Where are we at? Yeah, let's go take a break. We're going to take one more break. We'll be right back with BC Steel.
You can follow the show on Twitter at Wrestling Death. You can follow me at Reaper Matt C. And you can follow my guest BC Steel at 1SF Podcast. And speaking of that, BC hosts his own podcast called One Step Forward Podcast. You can follow that over on iTunes if you so wish. He just did one recently with Marcus that was very good. But then again, anything Marcus does is very good. And you know it. You know it's good. I'm the best. that's all I got plug-wise for you. So let's get back into the rest of the show.
We're back with BC Steel.
Being in the area for 16 years,
yeah,
you put it, you've seen a lot of guys come and go, like Shane Taylor.
Chris Taylor.
Oh,
we're not doing the worker name game. Okay.
No. No. You won't let me run my fucking show? Shane Taylor, Corey Graves, now Elias Sampson, formerly Logan Shula, Sam Elias?
Yeah, Samuel Elias, now Sam Adonis.
Yeah, DJ Z, Rainmaker, Okada.
He didn't come through here.
He didn't come through here.
No.
I'm just racist.
They all Ryan play. Rain?
Ryan Rain.
There you go.
There it is. He got it.
Same guy.
How many of those gentlemen have you got to work with? Did you see anything? Did you really ever, that many guys coming through, do you ever really see that in people? Like, can you see that coming, or is that just something that, like,
kind of see that, quote unquote?
Like, it's such a cliche thing to say, did you think they were going to become as big as they did? But can you, seeing so many guys come through and get to that certain point, do you really see that in them?
There's guys, like I said before we recorded, there's guys that I've heard, oh, well, they're good. But then you see a match where you're like, okay, that's a different level. Like I said, you and Tony Johnson, 2 out of 3 falls in Black Diamond. System Elite and Fantastic Ones. That whole feud in Black Diamond. Mm-hmm. Palace and LaRusso in the cage. Because I hadn't seen a lot of Palace work. But that blew my mind of what he was actually able to do there. There's, I think, a different scale when you say, is somebody going to make it? There's guys that I've saw that are they're not going to make it. Case in point, I don't know if you're going to use that part, but I'll mention it again. Doc Gallows, saw his second show ever, telling us how he has to be under a mask because he plays football. I get outside the ring and he's punching me in the chest, thinking they're chops. I'm like, this guy ain't going to fucking make shit.
Yeah.
He got the last laugh. He's kind of good. He's actually kind of really good.
Yeah.
And he's hilarious.
Yeah.
Didn't see it back then. Sterling, Corey Graves to you and me. Whew, name drop. Sort of. I actually didn't think he would make it, only because of his attitude. He thought he was king shit. Thought he was the greatest guy in the world. Thought that his stuff didn't stink. When I saw him again in 2007-2008, I thought he was the greatest guy in the world. He said that he worked, when he would go to Philly and go to these places, he specifically mentioned Raven, but he said there were guys that would pretty much let him know in one way or another that he's not good. That he's not as good as he thinks he is. That he's one of a million. That's why when guys are like, that act like they're an icon because they wrestle tri-state area. Yeah, it's cool. But you're a guy in Oklahoma, no clue who you are. Unless you were like the Intercontinental Champion or something, probably doesn't know who you are. Two guys that, one I predicted would have success, the other one I didn't think would, and I completely got it backwards. They both had success, but with CM Punk and Colt Cabana. IWC in December of 2001, I'd say, was the first, I think Norm Connors was the first promoter to ever fly them in. So it was like a huge deal. And when I watch them work, I'm like, they're both really good. Cabana will make it based on his likable personality. Punk won't, because he's just the guy that you just can see him being a whiny dick. He was always cool to me. Always super cool. One of the rare, that's a little Pittsburghese coming out. One of the rare guys that when you would ask for advice, it wouldn't be, kid, everything's great. You did great. Everything, great. Like, okay, that doesn't help. I know it wasn't great. Him and even Colt would say, when you ref, you're too tall, slouch. Don't tuck in your shirt while you're refing. Looks like you're grabbing your dick. Don't, when you're going to give a two count, actually give me a two count. And don't be afraid to say the numbers so I can hear it. Listen for my spots so I don't have to drag you in front of me like an asshole. Like stuff like that that I specifically remember, because it wasn't ripping me apart, but it was, hey, here's 5 things you did wrong. And since you asked me for advice, I'm going to give you all 5 of them. But yeah, didn't think Punk would make it. When he got signed, I was like, that'll be interesting to see what happens. It'll be interesting to see if he actually can, I don't want to use the term, but break through the grass ceiling. Not the glass ceiling, the grass one.
That's an easy one.
Yeah, they have one that's made of grass, and then when you break through that, it's glass, and then you hit the top. Yeah, really bad architecture. So it was really interesting to see that as, I would say, 1 in a million chance, just based on everything that I had seen. So, always cool to me, but I know he rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. Mm-hmm. Oh, and Matt Connor. That kid's got a future.
Clearly.
Awkward silence.
I'm going to ask a question. Did you see Chris Hero coming? Did you know he was going to have the success? Because you worked with Hero a decent amount.
I actually used to, back in 2000, when he had just gone from Wife Beater to Chris Hero, I had seen Chris Hero a lot. I didn't see him being at that level. I saw him being Reckless Youth in the late 90s. This guy is so good. By far better than a majority of everybody else. Why isn't he signed? Like, that type of guy. A guy that would come in when Matt Connor, you know, pays for to wrestle him. And you're like, he's just so good. Everybody he works with. And he's not going, okay, well, this is a smaller show. I'm going to mail it in. It's the same guy you get every single match without fail. So I knew he would be good. I knew he'd be a big deal. But didn't really think he would hit the heights that he did. But at the same time, I saw matches that he had that I would go, well, that's better than what I saw Monday. So I knew the caliber was there, just didn't think it would happen. Because he's, for a while, he had that Barry Windham body type. And I know he's a thyroid, so he's obviously a different body type now, just as good, if not better, than he was before. Except for his match with Matt Connor, because you probably didn't pay him enough when you paid to bring him in.
Clearly not.
No, absolutely not.
I didn't even pay him enough to get someone to record it, because that match is just gone.
Oh, good thing I didn't lie and said I saw it and it was great. Whew. Hey, of all the matches you've had, that was one of them.
It sure was. All right, let's play the games.
Yeah! It's time to play the game.
Time to play the game! To oppose you in the game today, we have a surprise visit from former guest Marcus Mann.
Hey, I'm here.
Yeah, you're here, buddy.
I live down the street and stuff.
You do. I didn't think you were going to make it here.
I left work specifically early to do this.
Okay.
So let's have my work done.
So you left managing specifically to do this.
There's a guy in the ring right now having no idea what to do because I walked out.
What do I do? It's nice that you can host the podcast taking time out of your reaping.
Yeah.
Reaping.
I'm in demand right now.
Reaping.
Yeah, I didn't call him Bill Cosby. Reaping. There's an E in there. There's a difference.
There's just so much wheat everywhere.
Oh, I got so many gimmicks from my bad wrestling company.
All right. Name of the game today is Hanging from the Rafters. I'm going to name an event, and you guys have to ballpark the attendance for said event.
Define ballpark.
Like
within
1,000 high or low.
Legit attendance or the reported
The attendance that was on Wikipedia when I looked it up.
Okay. Reported attendance.
Okay. Reported attendance. So, all right, here we go. Let's start.
So what are you giving us? The event?
I'm giving you the event, the date, and what the main event was.
Ooh, so you're not giving me the city. It's fine. You don't have to.
Bro, Minneapolis and not St. Paul. How am I going to know?
I have the city for two of them. I missed it on one. So
city would help.
Yeah.
Just saying.
I'm just gonna say.
And then how are we doing this? Is it just like him one, me one, or we?
Yeah.
Okay. Like I know if this is a buzzing portion, or if this is
no.
Okay.
That's why I needed two people. You both say one, and whoever's closer gets it.
We don't have buzzers. So.
Right, so are you going first?
I'll go first.
All right. I was gonna say, do you want to coin flip it?
Do you have a coin?
I got a nap.
What kind of society do we live in? Do you got a coin? No, I got a nap.
I got a nap for that.
Hey, honey, want to go home with me? I'm gonna blow you. Got a nap.
Got a nap.
I got a coin.
That'd be awesome.
Let's see if it works. No, it doesn't work.
Great. Nice piece of crap you got there, Marcus.
It's an old app. I think it's deleted.
Good job.
All right.
You can go first. Put your razor phone away.
You're the guest. You can go first. All right. First event, In Your House Mind Games. September 22nd, 1996. Main event being Shawn Michaels versus Mankind.
That was in Philadelphia.
What do you think the attendance was for that?
I will say, what was it, 96? Kind of on the cusp. I will say 11,150.
Okay. All right. Margus?
1996, Philadelphia. Business wasn't hot, but it was hotter than people realize. Hmm. I'm tempted. What did you say?
11-150.
11-150. I'm tempted to say 11-151 and hope that Ben not got that on the fucking nose.
Is this Price is Right sucks.
But I'm not. I think I'm going to go a little higher.
Uh-huh.
And I think I'm going to go at, we're going to go 15,000.
You're going to 15.
Yeah. I'm
gonna go even.
15. Yeah, let's go 15,000 even.
Okay. Marcus got it right on the nose. 15,000.
Holy cow.
He got it right on the fucking nose.
I was wondering why you look so shocked. You're like, wait.
Like, wait, you're really going to do that?
Nice.
Holy shit. Nice. Yeah. Point for Marcus.
This is going to be a slow game. Yeah. Or a quick game.
Next one, I picked this one specifically to play with Marcus, so this works out. WrestleMania 25.
Okay.
April 5th, 2009, Houston, Texas. Main event being Orton versus Triple H, but the match everyone remembers is Michaels and Taker.
I was actually there.
Exactly.
So,
obviously, you took a head count while you were there.
No, but that was 25. That was Houston. That was at the Reliant Stadium. Mm. Very, it's a big place. Mm-hmm. I'm giving Ben all the clues.
And I'll still miss.
Yeah. So, I remember a decent amount of people there.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm going to go 73,800.
Okay.
I literally just thought of a number and I was going to say 73.5. Well, I'm not saying that now.
Yeah.
Reliant Stadium. I'm trying to remember the year they built the... I'm using my sports knowledge on this.
Uh-huh.
I will say 81,247.
Okay.
Actual attendance number is... 72,000.
Holy shit!
744. So.
Oh!
Yeah.
I should have went with my number that I first thought.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're really overcompensating. Yeah.
Story of my life.
Yeah. So I remember being there and I remember it not being as big as they wanted,
mm-hmm.
Which was shocking. They really wanted it bigger because they wanted to beat the old Astrodome number, but they didn't get there.
Well, it's not the first time I've said something was much bigger than it actually was.
All right.
So I'm was that 2-0 me?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right.
It's probably going to be a clean sweep.
He got 2 out of 3. You're fucked.
Give me like like the Shinston, West Virginia 2004 show. That I can get on the nose. All right.
Well, this last
you want to give me an HBW show in 2014, I know that there's probably between 9 and 11 people there.
Wow. That's very specific.
We'll do this last one just for funsies.
Right.
Last event to go in the opposite direction as far as numbers go. WCW Greed, mm-hmm. March 18th, 2001, Jacksonville, Florida. Main event being Scott Steiner versus DDP for the WCW Championship. What do you think that attendance was?
Should I just go first?
Yeah.
I guess it is my turn to go first.
Mm-hmm.
I just saw something on Greed. It was in The Observer. Don't remember it. Let me stroke my beard. I will say 2,900.
Okay.
That's real low.
I know.
That's TNA house show numbers.
Yeah, so Jacksonville, Florida.
Mm-hmm.
You said what, 2001?
Yeah.
WCW was really, really low at this time.
Right at the tail end.
So they definitely weren't selling out.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know what a sellout in Jacksonville would be. But I'm going to go low, but not that low.
I have no respect.
7,400.
Okay.
Yeah.
If it's within 200, I'm going to walk out.
The actual attendance number is 5,030.
Ooh.
That'll be him. No, wait, what'd you say?
7,400. So I was
off by you said 2-something.
Yeah. So you were I was off
so by I was like, off by 2,100. You were off by what was it, 54?
5,030.
So I was on
yeah, you were a little closer.
Yes. Yeah, you suck it. I won this game. That one was worth bonus points. So it's actually 3-2 me.
So clearly Marcus wins.
Damn. What does he win?
Nothing.
I get to guest on the next podcast.
Yeah.
You could. That's what you could have. You could have him be a running guest.
I mean, he's the only one that really had any substance, so.
Well, what do you expect?
You're to show for that.
The four best things I taught to him, and he does them better. So what am I going to do?
I don't even know what those four things are. Was it bang the mat?
Bang the mat.
Don't wear a bra.
Yes. Don't take stupid bumps, which I didn't listen to, and he did much better than me. When in doubt, say fuck on camera. Screw up all of Jack Pollock spots.
Yeah, I don't do that.
Yeah, I did that two shows in a row.
Yeah.
It was bad. The third one wasn't my fault because I didn't get told I had a spot. So I only take the blame for two of those.
I have nothing's more frustrating as a manager than people not telling you a spot, and then that spot comes up and they stare at you.
Yeah.
And they're looking right at you and you go like, I don't know what you want from me.
I used to tell Crusher all the time, I know your spots. I know when my spot's coming. If you're going to whip the guy off the rope, don't look at me, because then everybody behind me knows that you're going to that I'm going to sweep the leg. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Dash.
See, I don't mind that.
See, I do a little bit if he's going to be reversed. Like if there's something, like if he's throwing him in, why would I grab the leg?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. No. 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 Like, okay, that's a different spot. All right. Like what I don't mind is if the wrestler and manager, like. If there's a communication between
them. Okay, yeah.
You should be.
Yeah, I agree with that. Like, watch your feet. At Meadville, Steamboat, when he went around to count the three, before I went and pretty much hugged him.
You pulled a Keith Hott.
Yeah. I was like, screw your shine. Hashtag F your shine. I just tackled him, and he glanced over at me, and I was like, yep. And then I went to Bulk, and I went, forget your spot now, asshole.
Yeah, no, I didn't say that. But. No, I don't mind there being a communication between wrestler and manager, shoot or work. Yeah. They would.
I agree.
If I know the spot is, like, we used to do this with Edric and LaRusso all the time. Edric got mentioned on the podcast. No, I'm here. Where the spot would be Edric or LaRusso's going to go for a super kick, Edric's going to roll through it or catch it or something like that. And I know that spot. When Chris is, setting up for the super kick, right before he goes to do the kick, I will scream out super kick as loud as possible so that Edric would hear it and counter it, because now he knows what's coming.
That makes sense.
If the counter is coming, and then the next time whenever he's tuning up and I would scream super kick and he gets kicked anyway, you go like, oh, well, he was too...
Yeah.
I tried to, but what are you going to do?
See, that stuff like that is where it makes the difference between a really good manager and a guy that just happens to be funny and promoter thinks that they should put him on the show.
Yeah.
There's a difference. I did not bury anything like that, by the way. No. I didn't do that once.
No.
Well, I did, but we're going to cut that out.
We can do it in the post-podcast.
The post-show. If you didn't get enough of BC Steel Marcus Mann and some Matt Connard, here's 2 hours.
All right, plug your shit.
You can see me on Twitter. At
you can see him on Twitter.
You can. I post many Twitter. Photos. I will also be doing live cam shows. No. Twitter, at 1SF Podcast, where my podcast is Patty Poopdick compared to Connard's, even though his was the inspiration for mine after the Doe episode. On Instagram, BC_Steel. I put a lot of hashtags and stuff. And on the Facebook, I almost said MySpace. On the Facebook, at 1SF Podcast, the little slash in that. Or BC Steel for real, if you want to see me completely complain and call people stupid.
Where do people send any information for custom matches with you?
If you would like custom matches, you can email me at bclovehorses at geocities.com. God, I hope. Geocities.com isn't a...
No.
It's also how you tell how old somebody is, where their first website was.
Oh, I had a Geocities.
I had a tripod. Yeah. I was one of the first 100,000 people to have a tripod website.
Did you have a CompuServe?
I did not. I did not. Sadly. But I did use Netscape Navigator.
I did too. I had did you have an ICQ number?
I did not. Because I'm not lame.
You went straight aim.
No, I was AOL 2.5. When I got away messages, I was so happy.
I had an AOL 3 is when I joined.
3?
3.0.
So I was an early adopter. So I'm more hipster than you are.
You're six months older than me, too.
Yeah. I still don't understand. You get 750 free hours, and in 1 month, there's only 720. Explain that to me. Because it was always a 30-day month they would send it to you. Explain that. This is why you should never let me and Marcus on the same podcast together.
For BC Steel, I'm Matt Connard. Till next time, stay cool, ghouls.
If I would have done that, I could be president. That's what I'm thinking. Maybe of WWF, but wow. World Wildlife Fund.
Yeah.
That's right. Not WWE. I want to be president of Panda Bears and other.
I think Jack Tunney's still president of WWF. He works there now.
And he's been dead for 10 years. So that's...
the they got him in the lawsuit.
Yeah. Makes sense.
With the name, they got Jack Tunney.
Maybe it could be like Jack Tunney the Third. Well, it's lineage. It passes down from generation to generation.
Is it like the Dalai Lama? Like,
yeah.
You bestow a new Jack Tunney every generation?
I bestow thee thine Jack Tunney. I think it's in the Bible somewhere.
Smoke comes out of a chimney and now we have a new Jack Tunney?
Yeah. That's in the Bible too. He went unto Galilee and it was good.